Noam Chomsky, MIT professor.
That's not a law of nature. That's a very specific decision, in fact, a judicial decision. So they're concerned only for the short-term profit of their stockholders, who are very highly concentrated.
Ray Anderson, CEO of Interface, the world's largest carpet manufacturer.
So the pressure's on the corporation to deliver results now and to externalize any cost that this unwary or uncaring public will allow it to externalize.
Samuel Epstein, professor of environmental medicine.
Something happened in 1940 which marked the beginning of a new era, the era of the ability to synthesize and create on an unlimited scale new chemicals that had never existed before in the world.
And using the magic of research, oil companies compete with each other in taking the petroleum molecule apart and rearranging it into, well, you name it.
So suddenly it became possible to produce any new chemicals, synthetic chemicals, the likes of which had never existed before in the world, for any purpose and at virtually no cost. As the petrochemical era grew and grew, warning signs emerged that some of these chemicals could pose hazards. The data initially were trivial, anecdotal, but gradually a body of data started accumulating to the extent that we now know that the synthetic chemicals which have permeated our workplace produce cancer and also birth defects. We are now in the midst of a major cancer epidemic. I have no doubt, and I have documented the basis for this, that industry is largely responsible for this overwhelming epidemic of cancer, in which one in every two men get cancer in their lifetimes and one in every three women get cancer in their lifetimes. Towards the end of 1989, a great box of documents arrived at my office without any indication where they came from. And I opened them and found in it a complete set of Monsanto files, particularly a set of files dealing with toxicological testing of cows who've been given RBGH.
BST, trade name Posilac, is being used in more than a quarter of the dairy herds in the United States, according to Monsanto. The milk has been drunk by a large portion of the American population since the Food and Drug Administration declared it safe for both cows and humans 4 years ago.
And at that time, Monsanto was saying, there's no evidence whatsoever of any adverse effects, we don't use antibiotics, and this clearly showed that they had lied through their teeth. The files described areas of chronic inflammation in the heart, lung, kidney, spleen, also reproductive effects, also a whole series of other problems.
There's a cost to the cows. The cows get sicker when they're injected with RBGH. They're injected with antibiotics. We know that people are consuming antibiotics through their food, and we know that that's contributing to antibiotic-resistant bacteria and diseases. And we know we're at a crisis when somebody can go into a hospital and get a staph infection and it can't be cured and they die. That's a crisis.
Again and again, we have the problem that whether you obey the law or not is a matter of whether it's cost-effective. If the chance of getting caught and the penalty are less than it costs to comply, people think of it as being just a business decision.
Every living system of Earth is in decline. Every life support system of Earth is in decline. And these together constitute the biosphere. The biosphere that supports and nurtures all of life, and not just our life, but perhaps 30 million other species that share this planet with us. The typical company of the 20th century, extractive, wasteful, abusive, linear in all of its processes, taking from the earth, making, wasting, sending its products back to the biosphere, waste to a landfill. We're leaving a terrible legacy of poison and diminishment of the environment for our grandchildren's grandchildren, generations not yet born.
Sam Gibara, Chairman, former CEO of Goodyear, the world's largest tire corporation.
Corporations have gone global. And by going global, the governments have lost some control over corporations, regardless of whether the corporation can be trusted or cannot be trusted. Governments today do not have over the corporations the power that they had and the leverage that they had 50 or 60 years ago. And that's a major change. So governments have become powerless compared to where they were before.
Capitalism today commands the towering heights and has displaced politics and politicians as the new high priests.
Corporations, by law, must increase their bottom line. In order to expand, they have to sell more products. Sell more products, they must consume more resources. Even going back 50 years, we could see the effect that this was having on our environment. Today, the effects of pollution and industrialization have multiplied tenfold, and the damage is terrifying. And yet these same corporations still want to drill for oil in the Arctic. And that's not just morally blind, that's morally bankrupt. Also, corporate expansion into other countries to get those resources is the cause of so much war and conflict, as you will see in this film. We need our corporations to bring us the technologies, many of which already exist, that can help us address the issues we face. And yet, the system encourages a thirst for short-term profit. I know many of us have heard stories about powerful groups of businessmen who pull the strings of governments from behind closed doors. And so many rumors have sprung up around organizations like the Bilderbergs and the Council on Foreign Relations that it's really difficult to know what to believe. However, it is an interesting fact. The Federal Reserve Bank of the United States is not actually owned by the government. It is owned by a private banking cartel. Now, whoever these men are that can loan money to governments have to be some of the most influential men in the world, and yet we don't know who they are. Not all conspiracy theories are just theories, and the research for this film pulled up some interesting quotes.
The world is governed by very different personages from what is imagined by those who are not behind the scenes. Benjamin Disraeli. The one aim of these financiers is world control by creation of inextinguishable debt. Henry Ford. Since I have entered politics, I have chiefly had men's views confided to me privately. Some of the biggest men in the United States are afraid of something. They know there is a power somewhere, a power so subtle, so organized, so complete and pervasive that they better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it. Woodrow Wilson. Banks and financial elites.
Gold is valuable because it is relatively rare. Like gold, the value of money is determined by how much money is in circulation. One would think the power to regulate the money supply that controls our economy and affects our lives in every way would be in the hands of the government of the people. But surprisingly, it is not. The power to control the money supply is in the hands of the Federal Reserve Bank. It is important to note the Federal Reserve is not a government organization. It is a private banking cartel.
G. Edward Griffin, author and filmmaker.
The Federal Reserve System is a banking cartel. It's no different than a banana cartel or an oil cartel or the sugar cartel. It just happens to be a banking cartel.
Ron Paul.
Congress, in essence, has ceded total control of the value of our money to a secretive central bank.
It's a group of very large and powerful private banking interests.
Congress knows nothing of the conversations, the plans, and the action taken in concert with other central banks.
The government has given it a monopoly, a virtual monopoly, to create the nation's money supply.
But all these actions directed by the Federal Reserve alter the purchasing power of our money. This has significant consequences on our economy and our political stability. Wages never keep up with profits on Wall Street and the banks, thus sowing the seeds of class and discontent.
It is bewildering to think that we allow an unelected and unregulated group of private bankers to wield such incredible influence over our society. The truth is that most of us will live from paycheck to paycheck in a continued state of struggle, unable to question a system of finance that keeps us on a constant treadmill. And while most of us struggle to stay ahead, billions of dollars in profits flow into the hands of private bankers at our expense. For this is how the system works. Whenever the government needs money, it requests it from the Federal Reserve. But the Fed doesn't just give the money to the government, it loans the money at interest. Every dollar the government loans from the Federal Reserve Bank has to be paid back with interest. This keeps the government, and as such the people, in a continual state of debt. All of our income taxes are paid back to the Federal Reserve to pay off the debt that the government incurs when it borrows money from the Federal Reserve Bank. This is all a matter of public record and easily verifiable should you care to look. The founding fathers of America were well aware of the perils of central banks and sought to prevent them. Several central banks were set up but then removed. But the ruthless and powerful bankers, the Rockefellers, the Morgans, the Warburgs, the Rothschilds, were determined to set up a central banking system in America at any cost. In the early 1920s, J.P. Morgan, one of the most influential bankers of his day, caused massive panic in the markets by spreading rumors that many private banks were about to go bankrupt. This caused widespread panic. Everyone started withdrawing their deposits en masse, and the banks had to call in all of their loans to try and survive. The hysteria destroyed the markets, and the banking elites, having caused the panic, used it to influence politicians and the public that a central bank would bring stability to the system. At a secret meeting in 1910 at the estate of J.P. Morgan on Jekyll Island, the bankers wrote the Federal Reserve Act. They then gave their considerable financial and political support to Woodrow Wilson on the condition he would support the bill if elected. In 1913, Woodrow Wilson signed the bill into law. He later wrote in regret,
"Our great industrial nation is controlled by its system of credit. Our system of credit is privately concentrated. The growth of the nation, therefore, and all our activities are in the hands of a few men, who necessarily, by very reason of their own limitations, chill and check and destroy genuine economic freedom. We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and the duress of small groups of dominant men."
The bankers made immediate moves to increase and consolidate their power. From 1921 to 1929, the banks drastically increased the money supply, making millions of loans. Then, in October 1929, having quietly exited the markets, they started calling in those loans en masse. The hysteria that followed led to the Great Depression. The conspiring bankers bought up rival banks and massive corporations for pennies on the dollar. Their position of power and influence had become absolute. Congressman Lewis McFadden, a long-time opponent of the banking cartels, began bringing impeachment proceedings.
"It was a carefully contrived occurrence. International bankers sought to bring about a condition of despair so that they might emerge the rulers of us all."
But sadly, after two failed assassination attempts, he was poisoned at a banquet. It is interesting to note, on June 4, 1963, John F. Kennedy signed a bill that would have allowed the government to print money backed by the nation's silver reserves. This bold move would have taken power away from the banking cartels. Kennedy was shot dead just 6 months later. We might never know the truth of Kennedy's assassination, but history is replete with tales of mysterious deaths befalling those who moved against the banking cartels.
The media.
We get almost all of our information from the media. If we base our opinions on bad or biased information, then everything we believe is suspect. Political debate today is kept within very narrow boundaries, so the media can present both sides of these narrow positions and give the impression we have a free press. However, to talk about left or right-wing press is to miss a very important point. Whatever message big business wants carried, with whatever slant, the media will carry that story unfailingly.
Manufacturing consent. What is that title meant to describe?
Well, the title is actually borrowed from a book by Walter Lippmann, written back around 1921, in which he described what he called the manufacture of consent as a revolution in the practice of democracy. What it amounts to is a technique of control. And he said this was useful and necessary because the common interests, the general concerns of all people, elude the public. The public just isn't up to dealing with them. And they have to be the domain of what he called a specialized class. Notice that that's the opposite of the standard view about democracy. There's a version of this expressed by the highly respected moralist and theologian Reinhold Niebuhr, who was very influential on contemporary policymakers. His view was that rationality belongs to the cool observer, but because of the stupidity of the average man, he follows not reason but faith. And this naive faith requires necessary illusion. The point is that in a military state or a feudal state or what we would nowadays call a totalitarian state, it doesn't much matter what people think because you've got a bludgeon over their head and you can control what they do. But when the state loses the bludgeon, when you can't control people by force, and when the voice of the people can be heard, you have this problem. It may make people so curious and so arrogant that they don't have the humility to submit to a civil rule, and therefore you have to control what people think. And the standard way to do this is to resort to what in more honest days used to be called propaganda, manufacture of consent, creation of necessary illusions, various ways of either marginalizing the general public or reducing them to apathy.
Now, I'd say I'm just Jane, USA, and I say, well, gee, this is a democratic society, and what do you mean thought control? I make up my own mind. I create my own destiny. What would you say to her?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would suggest that Jane take a close look at the way the media operate, the way the public relations industry operates, the extensive thinking that's been going on for a long, long period about the necessity for finding ways to marginalize and control the public in democratic societies.
100 years ago, Sigmund Freud, famous for giving us the science of psychological analysis, suggested that the ideal of individual freedom, central to the idea of democracy, was impossible. He said our hidden desires were too dangerous. Human beings could never be allowed to fully express themselves, that we must always be controlled and would thus always be discontent. Sigmund Freud's American nephew was Edward Bernays. Bernays is almost completely unknown today, but his influence on our society is possibly much greater than Freud. Bernays took the new science developed by his famous uncle and used it to manipulate the masses. Bernays is the man who invented the profession and the term public relations. He worked for most of the major corporations and advised politicians on how to win favor with the public. Like Freud, Bernays was convinced that humans were driven by irrational forces, but by stimulating our inner desires and then sating them with consumer products, he created a new way to manage the irrational behavior of the masses.
Democracy, to my father, was a wonderful concept, but I don't think he felt that all those publics out there would had reliable judgment, and that they very easily might vote for the wrong man or want the wrong thing. so that they had to be guided from above. You appeal to their desires and their unrecognized longings, that sort of thing. That you can tap into their deepest desires or their deepest fears and use that to your own purposes.
Many influential thinkers came to believe that the public were incapable of making rational decisions, and that as such, democracy could never work. Walter Lippmann, one of the most influential political writers at that time, argued that if people were in reality motivated by irrational forces, then what was needed was control by the elites to manage what he called the bewildered herd. And this could be accomplished by using psychological techniques to control the unconscious desires of the masses.
Stuart Ewan, historian of public relations.
So here you have Walter Lippmann, probably the most influential political thinker in the United States, who is essentially saying that it's not that the people are in charge, but that the people's desires are in charge. So democracy is reduced from something which assumes an active citizenry to the idea of the public as passive consumers. Driven primarily by instinctual or unconscious desires, and that if you can in fact trigger those needs and desires, you can get what you want from them.
The corporations understood that to change our consumer culture from needs-based to desire-based purchasing, people must be trained to want new things even before the old had been consumed. The corporations understood that they could pacify the masses with consumer goods while increasing profits through mass consumption. Man's desires must overshadow his needs. Edward Bernays was at the very center of shaping this new mentality.
Bernays really is the guy within the United States, more than anybody else, who sort of brings to the table psychological theory as something that is an essential part of how, from the corporate side, of how we are going to appeal to the masses effectively. And the whole sort of merchandising establishment and sales establishment is ready for Sigmund Freud. I mean, they are ready for understanding what motivates the human mind.
He showed the corporations how they could make people want things they did not need by linking products to their unconscious desires. And the mass media would be the key. Most of our ideas about right and wrong, social and moral justice, what is in fashion and what is not, are given to us by the media. And if an idea is given to us by the media, we seldom question it.
The media and marketing men spend billions of dollars in research. They have developed an entire science based on the very best psychology and knows exactly which one of our buttons to press to make us swallow an idea or buy a product. And they're not just selling us laundry detergent. They sell us everything from plastic gadgets to warfare. If we are to make decisions about the future of our society, the single most important thing we need is the truth. So I would like us to imagine a nightmare scenario. A powerful group of businessmen with access to the White House, who control the media, and who make obscene amounts of money whenever there is war.
From the White House in the office of the President of the United States, we present an address by Dwight D. Eisenhower.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
President Eisenhower's concern about the military-industrial complex, his words have unfortunately come true. He was worried that priorities are set by what benefits corporations as opposed to what benefits the country.
Lockheed Martin and McDonnell Douglas and Boeing, throughout America, there are factories, there are corporations that are involved on a daily basis.
You know, people sometimes think of the defense budget as you got to arm the troops, defend the nation. But for most people that are involved in it, you realize this is business. competition for contracts between very large corporations.
Charles Lewis, Center for Public Integrity.
We have a snapshot in time after September 11th where at least 71 companies that we were able to identify are starting to get contracts to go in Afghanistan and Iraq. All of the top 10 companies had former U.S. officials who had worked in the Pentagon or other parts of the U.S. government on their boards of directors or as their top executives. It's known as the revolving door, and people cash in all the time. Public officials go to work for companies, and they make triple, quadruple, 10 times sometimes as much money as they used to make in public service.
Dan Briardy, author of The Iron Triangle.
The Carlyle Group plays in industries and in an area that are heavily influenced by politics.
My understanding is they are now the 11th or 12th largest defense contractor, a multi-billion dollar annual enterprise with an almost obscenely high profit margin.
Because the companies are privately owned, privately controlled, they don't have to, they're not subject to the Securities Exchange laws.
They hire defense experts like Frank Carlucci or Frank Finelli. They hire politicians like George Bush Sr. or James Baker III.
Most people think about this topic as simply the Iron Triangle, the relationship of the Pentagon with Congress and industry. So I'm a practitioner who has been on all three sides of this triangle over the last 25 years or so, and it really has been a lot of fun.
The Iron Triangle is in some ways a uniquely American phenomenon. It's the confluence of the military, big business, and politics.
I will name as the next Secretary of Defense the best qualified man in America to carry on CAPS work, Frank Carlucci.
When Frank Carlucci came on board, he was coming straight from the Pentagon as Secretary of Defense. A year, 2 years later, the Gulf War hit. And everybody knows that wartime is boom time for the defense industry, and Carlyle made a ton of money. They did very, very well. They really cleaned up. After that, Carlyle said, hey, you know, having these politicians on board is pretty great. I mean, they know things that nobody else knows. In fact, you know, Frank Carlucci was setting up policies while he was in office as Secretary of Defense that he's now capitalizing on as chairman of Carlyle Group. They picked up George Bush, James Baker.
Richard Darman is over there, who is a former budget director in the White House.
Arthur Levitt, the former SEC chairman. William Kennard, the former FCC chairman.
In Europe, you have former Prime Minister of England, John Major. Karl Otto Paul, from the head of the German Central Bank. Eberhard Kuhnheim, who is the chairman of the supervisory board of BMW. The Asia part, former Prime Minister of Thailand.
So these guys carry a tremendous amount of influence. And they are able to predict trends in global markets, predict trends in political shifts, and in some ways, and this is the sort of the most insidious part. And if you want to be cynical about the Carlyle Group, you have to be concerned about their ability to influence these trends and actually affect change in government policy, which would positively affect their investments.
If you have an organization that is able to operate behind the scenes without real accountability, and that same organization has the ability to ruin political careers for people who are a little bit too inquisitive or a little bit too honest, or to shape public thinking, then we have the means for a kind of control globally that is probably unprecedented.
You can't read their reports because they're privately held, and there's no obvious litigation against them. No one in Congress has had a hearing about them. They're so powerful, no one wants to touch it. So we have this problem here. This is a mysterious, immensely powerful company with virtually no scrutiny.
On this February day, as this nation stands at the brink of battle, every American on some level must be contemplating the horrors of war. And yet, this chamber is, for the most part, dreadfully silent. Ah, you can hear a pin drop. Listen. There is no debate. There's no attempt to lay out for the nation the pros and cons of this particular war.
We have a Congress that failed in every way to ask the right questions, to hold the president to account. Our Congress failed us miserably, and that's because many in Congress are beholden to the military-industrial complex.
The defense budget is $750 billion. Profits went up last year well over 25%. I guarantee you, when war becomes that profitable, you're going to see more of it.
We have a process that has a seamlessness where the corporate interests that stand to benefit are so intertwined and interwoven with the political forces that the financial elites and the political elites have become the same people.
The war with Iraq gives us a snapshot in time where we can see the effects of all these powerful influences coming together.
They have weapons of mass destruction. That is what this war was about. And Saddam Hussein possesses biological and chemical weapons.
The fact that there are weapons there.
You've heard the president say repeatedly that he has chemical and biological weapons.
That Saddam Hussein still has chemical and biological weapons, and he is moving ever closer to developing a nuclear weapon. Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles. High-strength aluminum tubes suitable for nuclear weapons production.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
They have weapons of mass destruction. That is what this war was about.
There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
Saddam Hussein is a homicidal dictator who is addicted to weapons of mass destruction.
With the drumbeat for an attack on Iraq increasing, the Bush administration may finally have the ammunition they've been looking for.
The type of war coverage we've seen in the United States is exactly what you'd expect with a system dominated by a handful of very wealthy corporations that benefit by having a world run by the United States to make the world profitable for them.
Against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
Saddam Hussein is a homicidal dictator who is addicted to weapons of mass destruction.
With the drumbeat for an attack on Iraq increasing, the Bush administration may finally have the ammunition they've been looking for.
The type of war coverage we've seen in the United States is exactly what you'd expect with a system dominated by a handful of very wealthy corporations that benefit by having a world run by the United States to make the world profitable for them.
They have weapons of mass destruction.
September 11th.
September 11th.
September 11th. September 11th.
Dangerous world. A grave new threat.
Horrific acts of atrocities. Murderous regimes dedicating to killing us.
There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies.
A Hollywood set designer was brought in to create a $200,000 backdrop for official war briefings.
In USA Today and in the major network coverage and so forth, you had this very elaborate computer-generated graphic sort of coverage of the different U.S. Air Force and Army planes and gunships and helicopters and very snazzy weapons of all descriptions.
Well, it's quite amazing. I've fallen almost in love with the F-18 Super Hornet because it's quite a versatile plane.
It's not enough for us to be told to accept this war. We're really encouraged to gain some kind of vicarious pleasure from it.
Full-length DVD presented by Tom Brokaw, Operation Iraqi Freedom. Log on to shopndc.com and get it today.
Calling it Code Orange Plus. The Fed's decision to raise the terror alert to high. America on high alert from biggest cities to smallest towns.
We have every reason to assume the worst.
The Pentagon, for many years now, since Vietnam, has worked extremely hard at shaping news and how the media reports that news. We train people to say certain things in a certain way.
Well, a militia group linked to terror being backed by Iran and setting up camp on America's doorstep.
Al-Qaeda in Iran. These people are out to kill us.
People don't understand the danger that this country poses to the world.
The propaganda campaign waged by the media was so successful that by 2003, opinion polls showed the vast majority of Americans believed Saddam Hussein was linked to 9/11. This claim was false. The majority believed he possessed stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction. This claim, too, was false. These claims allowed the corporate interests and the administration
to frame the attack on Iraq as a justifiable act of self-defense. Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski worked at the Pentagon. She saw firsthand how the intelligence was distorted to win support for the attack.
The information in there, drawn from fact, you could find bits and pieces of fact throughout, but framed, articulated, crafted to convince someone of what? Well, of things that weren't true. Things that weren't true. 911, Al-Qaeda related to Saddam Hussein, possibly some involvement there. The very things that a year later, President Bush himself denies and feigns his surprise. I don't know why everybody thinks that.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
Well, I worked in a place where they concentrated on preparing this storyline and selling it.
There's no doubt that Saddam Hussein was a tyrant, a thug, a butcher. It's true. It was as true in 2003 as it was in 1983-84 when Donald Rumsfeld visited Iraq and met with Saddam Hussein and other top officials as an emissary of the Reagan administration to improve ties to Iraq. It was true in 1988 when Saddam gassed the Kurdish people in the north of Iraq with the implicit support of the United States.
But what they're trying to do is have an Iraq that is a friend to us, not an Iraq that is liberated. This is total bogus. We never intended to liberate the Iraqi people. We intended to liberate Iraq from Saddam and have a footprint, a military footprint there. And we've done that now. We have Kuwait, we have Fifth Fleet in Bahrain, we have a nice base in Qatar, but it's a little too far south. And what do we have? We have four bases in Iraq. Beautiful bases. We can hit Syria, we can hit Iran, we can keep tabs on Afghanistan. There's all kinds of things we can do from those bases.
Stan Goff, ex-US Army.
The larger picture is being driven by the fact that we're about to hit peak oil worldwide, that there's this sort of emerging global competition between us and China, there's the ongoing economic rivalries between us and Europe, and so Southwest Asia becomes geopolitically a linchpin.
Max Wolf, Department of Economics, University of Massachusetts.
And the idea is, if you want to have real leverage or control in the future global economy, if you can sit back and control the tap for natural gas mostly and oil secondly, but very importantly, that will give you enormous strategic power in the world.
If you map the pipeline, proposed pipeline route across to Afghanistan, and you look at our bases, matches perfectly. Our bases are there to solve a problem that Taliban could not solve. Taliban couldn't provide security in that part of Afghanistan. Well, now that's where our bases are. So is that have to do with Osama bin Laden?
The context is the desire of the United States to control these strategically crucial regions. The pretext, that is the excuse for going in Afghanistan was about terrorism and Osama bin Laden. In Iraq, it's about weapons of mass destruction and Saddam Hussein. But in the end, neither one of those wars was really about those people or those regimes. It was about securing and solidifying American control over these incredibly important regions of the world.
American power and American empire is actually flaunted in people's faces around the world, where we rub our shoe in their face and tell them that we're top dog. And you will work with us because you sure as hell don't want to be against us.
The world has changed, and we're not going back to where we were. I find one of the sillier ideas is the notion, and you hear it all the time, American policy has been hijacked by a handful of people, and as soon as they're out of there, we're going to go back to the way it was. They're wrong about that.
I think the history of the United States as a work in progress and our attempt at democracy here is a constant struggle between capitalism and democracy. And there have been ebbs and flows where democracy looks like it's winning. You rein in those powerful forces. But the fundamental reality is that most of the government's decisions today are substantially dictated by powerful corporate interests. Clearly, capitalism is winning.
The origin of the phrase shock and awe and the whole theory of modern warfare date back to a 1996 advisory report written by Harland Ullman of the National War College. Quote, "The aim of modern warfare, by means of sheer intimidation, is to inflict a deep psychological injury, to scare and terrorize through the massive application of force, directed at the public will. The aim is to impose a regime of shock and awe through instant and incomprehensible levels of massive destructive power directed at influencing society writ large through utterly brutal and ruthless application of force.
That is the reality of shock and awe. That young boy was innocent, as were the people of 9/11. And this is how violence begets violence. For anyone who doesn't yet know, our corporations have been in the Middle East trampling on their beliefs and customs since they discovered oil. Our corporations will tell us they are just getting us the things we need, and there is truth in that. But we have to decide what price we are willing to pay. We as individuals drive the demand for these resources. As long as we are all aware of the fact that there is blood in this oil, and that is the decision that we make, then so be it.
Barack Obama continues the military build-up in the Middle East, as George Bush did for him. Note the 10th anniversary of Guantanamo Bay last week, in spite of Barack Obama's promises to close it. The ghost of Christmas future.
It's completely understandable that people bury their heads in the sand, and if we don't look too closely, life doesn't seem too bad in many areas of the world. But that is going to change, and there are some logical outcomes to the way this system works that will affect every one of us.
Mark Barry, author of Spooked, Espionage in Corporate America.
I was invited to Washington, D.C. to attend this meeting that was being put together by the National Security Agency called the Critical Thinking Consortium. I remember standing there in this room and looking over on one side of the room, and we had CIA, NSA, DIA, FBI, Customs, Secret Service. And then on the other side of the room, we had Coca-Cola, Mobil Oil, GTE, and Kodak. And I remember thinking, I am like in the epicenter of the intelligence industry right now. I mean, the line is not just blurring, it's just not there anymore. And to me, it spoke volumes as to how industry and government were consulting with each other and working with each other.
On August 20th, 2007, at the protest against the Security Prosperity Partnership Leaders Summit in Montebello, Quebec, three police officers dressed as radical protesters with rocks in their hands were confronted by legitimate protesters and accused of trying to incite a riot.
Go on, it's online! It's a peaceful demonstration!
Would the government prefer a violent confrontation between protesters and police in order to discredit the protesters and ignore their message?
Okay, this is eyewitness video is under house arrest in St. Paul, is the subject line.
We had colleagues in Minneapolis had all their video equipment and computers taken about a week ago.
Eyewitness video was remarkably successful in exposing police misconduct and outright perjury by police during the 2004 RNC.
The initial news report in the Army Times newspaper last month noted, in addition to emergency response, the force, quote, may be called upon to help with civil unrest and crowd control. Did this surprise you?
It did. It surprised me also that NORTHCOM itself was involved in intelligence sharing with local police officers in St. Paul. I mean, what in the world is NORTHCOM doing looking at what some of the protesters are involved in? And you had infiltration up there, too. But what we have going on in this country is we have infiltration and spying that goes on not only at the, all the way from the campus police, practically, Amy, up to the Pentagon and the National Security Agency. We're becoming a police state here. And if we looked at national Security Presidential Directive 51 that he signed on May 9th of 2007, Amy. This gives the president enormous powers to declare a catastrophic emergency and to bypass our regular system of laws, essentially, to impose a form of martial law.
The Patriot Act was passed here in the United States without public debate, without any debate by Congress, just passed. It's a frontal assault on the Constitution.
Right now, as we talk, the Fourth and Sixth Amendments to the Constitution, to the Bill of Rights, are dead letters.
Both of these bills were written into the Constitution by the Founding Fathers in order to protect the people of America from the government of America. Right now, the right to freedom of speech, the right to free assembly, and the right to a fair trial are no longer protected by law.
The result of the Patriot Act, the Military Tribunal Act, and many other bills written in the name of Homeland Security is that almost any action, speech, or protest against the government can be construed legally as terrorism. Your home can be searched secretly without a warrant. You can be arrested with no charges revealed to you. You can be detained indefinitely and tortured without any protection under the law. In 2005, Congress passed the Real ID Act. Soon, we will be required to carry ID cards by law. There are plans to equip these cards with RFID tracking chips that will be able to track your every move. These tracking chips are already in all new passports. Many believe this will eventually lead to the implanted chip, which is already being used in many places in our society.
We have a Florida family who are really pioneers in a brave new world. They have volunteered to be the first ever to have microchip identification devices implanted into their body.
After 9/11, I was really concerned with the security of my family.
I wouldn't mind having something planted permanently in my arm that would identify me.
It is not difficult to see a future where we are all locked in to a monitored control grid, where every move and all transactions will be tracked, monitored, and recorded. And if anyone gets out of line, they can just turn off their chip. Could the sense of fear and isolation prevalent in our society allow us to accept totalitarian measures of this nature? And if we become scared enough, might we not even demand them? Has our sense of fear and division detached us from reality? It is not too difficult to imagine that many of our fears are manufactured for us. History shows us that many in power have used fear to manipulate societies, and there are those who would benefit from a totalitarian world government. This is Aaron Russo, a former politician. Next to him is Nicholas Rockefeller, of the Rockefeller banking family. After a long friendship, Aaron Russo eventually ended their relationship, appalled at what he had learned of the Rockefellers and their plans.
So he said to me one night, he said that there's going to be an event there, and out of that event, you're going to see we're going to go into Afghanistan, so we can run pipelines from the Caspian Sea, we're going to go into Iraq to take the oil and establish a base in the Middle East, and we're going to go into Venezuela and try and get rid of Chavez. And the first two they've accomplished, Chavez they didn't accomplish, and so you're going to see guys going into caves looking for looking for people that they're never going to find. You know, he was laughing about the fact that you have this war on terror. There's no real enemy. He's talking about how by having this war on terror, you can never win it, because it's an eternal war, and so you can always keep taking people's liberties away. And I said, how are you going to convince people that this war is real? He said, but the media can convince everybody it's real. I mean, you know, it's just that you keep talking about things, you keep saying it over and over and over again, and eventually people believe it. You know, you created the Federal Reserve in 1913 through lies. You create 9/11, which is another lie. Through 9/11, you're fighting a war on terror, and now all of a sudden you go into Iraq, which was another lie, and now they're going to do Iran, you know? And it's all one thing leading to another, leading to another, leading to another. Now, I would say, what are you doing this for? What's the point of this thing? You have all the money in the world you ever want. You have all the power. I said, you know, you're hurting people. It's not a good thing. And he would say, what do you care about the people for? Take care of yourself, and you take care of your family. And then I said to him, what are the ultimate goals here? So the ultimate goal is to get everybody in this world chipped with the RFID chip, and have all money be on those chips and everything on those chips. And if anybody wants to protest what we do or violate what we want, we just turn off their chip.
We shall have one world government, whether or not we like it. The only question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent. Paul Warburg, Council on Foreign Relations and architect of the Federal Reserve System.
There are some very troubling possible futures for our society. Climate change will displace millions of people, and we'll hit peak oil in 2015. Thereafter, the price of oil will skyrocket. So we'll see supply decrease, and we'll see prices of basic foods and every basic commodity spiral upwards. Our current world population is just under 7 billion, and that figure will double approximately every 35 years. So take a look at where you live. Try to imagine double the amount of people, twice the demand for resources, double the amount of pollution. Massive changes are coming whether we like it or not. I'm not a politician. I'm not looking for your vote, so I can give it to you straight. This system cannot continue. So who will make the decisions about who gets food to eat or who goes hungry or who gets water to drink and who goes without? Because the idea of allowing mindless corporations or wealthy elites to make decisions about population control is terrifying.
The great heroes of our times, people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King, incredible though they were, could not create change on their own. Only the will of the people can do that. And together, we can accomplish anything.
Any system that places money and profit above all else has an Achilles heel, the bottom line.
Interestingly, the way to win back democracy, end the wars, and save our environment has just one cure, and it's simple. We live in a capitalist system. Everything we do is based on the exchange of money. The media and the advertising men have turned us into obedient little consumers trying to buy ourselves to happiness in a throwaway society. This creates such a demand on our resources that our corporations invade other countries to get more, causing untold war and conflict. Then, using the wealth and power that we give them, corporations undermine democracy and justice. However, the unlikely and ironic outcome of consumerism is that it makes you, the consumer, all-powerful. The way we use money has more influence in our society than anything else, and the way we choose to spend our money can change everything.
No company will continue a practice or a product that you, the consumer, will not buy. It's vitally important that you understand this because this gives you ultimate power to change the world you live in. Companies are extremely sensitive about you buying their products because if you don't buy their stuff, they go out of business. That's not something any company is willing to consider. And by choosing to spend your money wisely, you can promote those companies that do business in a socially responsible way.
Without saying a word, you will have sent a clear message that they simply cannot ignore. It will be heard, heeded, and acted upon, guaranteed. This is real power.
For example, if a company pollutes the environment or uses bad business practices, if you don't buy their stuff, they will change. If you don't want food with chemicals or GMOs in it, then don't buy it.
Basic foods and cleaning products make up 70% of our weekly purchases. This drives the agriculture and chemical industries that have a massive effect on our environment. If we can start making the right choices about these simple everyday purchases, we can save our environment.
We've got into the habit of buying junk fast foods that have no actual food in them. We buy gallons of poisonous household cleaners when one degradable soft soap will do. We are poisoning our homes and wasting our hard-earned money for no good reason. Why? Because the advertising industry tells us to. They just want you to buy stuff.
The car is the single biggest drain on the Earth's resources. Just about every mineral, every chemical, and every metal known to man goes into the manufacture of our cars. The gasoline engine is inefficient and poisons our environment. The car, as it is today, cannot be sustained. It is up to us to drive the demand for clean, efficient vehicles. Do not underestimate the power of that dollar bill in your pocket. The way you spend that dollar already affects economies and lives around the world. Spent wisely, it can fix every problem known to man.
The minute we start taking responsibility and spending our money wisely, every politician, every corporation, and leader around the world is going to know that we have woken up. And that is the most important point in this film. All of the abuse in our system happens because we just roll over and take it. But when we get involved and start making the right decisions, everything changes. Our consumer choices are the easiest way for us to get involved in a very meaningful and powerful way. But the issue is our involvement. You and I taking responsibility. You and I demanding the truth, learning the facts, and making our decisions accordingly.
There are serious decisions to be made about the future of our society. Because there are so many of us, and population levels are rising all the time, we have to drastically reduce our demand for every consumer product. Breaking the habits of a lifetime won't be easy. Retooling industry and maintaining balance in our markets and economies is a massive undertaking. But we can address all of these questions. You have the power to deny profits to offending corporations and support those who maintain good practices. You can express the concerns you hold dear and herald a new beginning at every level of our society.
This is the 21st century. If we use our resources wisely, there is no reason why anyone shouldn't have what they need. There's no reason whatsoever why people are still starving to death on our planet. And the common man or woman, whether they are Israeli or Palestinian, Protestant or Catholic, or Iraqi or American, the common man just wants to live in peace and justice in a clean environment. When we look around the world and we see that that is not the case, we know that the will of the majority is not being listened to. That's the first sign that our system is broken. Government won't make these changes for us. Yet again, it is down to the common man. Please don't just watch this movie and turn away. We can fix this system. Go to the website. Take that first step towards an incredible future for all of us. Thank you for watching.
And that's ethosthemovie.com. I don't hold out a lot of hope for salvation through ethical consumerism. If I have a few thousand dollars of assets under my control, and remember most people have less than that, and the average Carlyle employee has $300 million under his control, then it doesn't seem to me that that's going to bring about much change. Now, if it were to threaten the interests of the psychopaths at the top, there's always the quantitative easing wildcard. They can just inject unlimited amounts of money into the system to make sure that if market rules are followed, their will is implemented. As we know, market rules are often not followed. We've heard about the collusion of the Iron Triangle. So do consume responsibly for the benefit of yourself and others. Don't kid yourself that that alone is going to make any difference, any more than having laws against war criminals on the books is going to bring George Bush and Tony Blair before trial at The Hague. This and 585 other shows are available for download from our website, unwelcomeguests.net. There's a mailing list, altruist.org/unwelcome, and you can start or join the discussion about this episode at unwelcomeguest.net/586. Our theme music is by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thank you for listening. Keep giving all you've got.